In the early summer of 2015, I could not imagine that immigration had the power to deliver somebody to the White House. Just 7% of Americans believed immigration was the nation's most critical challenge, according to Gallup. 3 in 4 thought it was good for the country. Only a third said we should admit fewer immigrants. This was half the share who thought so in the mid-1990s, when California's Governor Pete Wilson ran for re-election by whipping up fears of an illegal alien invasion. Indeed, it was the lowest share since the 1960s. Illegal immigration was, after all, pretty contained. There were 1.2 million fewer unauthorized immigrants in the United States in 2015 than there had been in 2007, when the implosion of the housing bubble wiped out the construction jobs that many of them relied on. The economy was growing briskly after its painful slog out of the Great Recession, and the unemployment rate was falling fast, reducing what competition there might have been between immigrants and American workers for available jobs. Then, Donald Trump decided to run for president. He promised to protect the homeland from the rapist thugs streaming illegally into the United States from Mexico. He pledged to build a wall, to once and for all bring America's civ-like southern border under control. All of a sudden, the fear of immigrants that was lying dormant in America's subconscious propelled Trump to the presidency. It may change the United States for good. There's a public park in Brooklyn a few blocks from where my son Mateo used to go to school. It's named, in true Brooklyn style, after a Beastie Boy, Adam Yauch. In the days after the election, somebody painted swastikas on the playground equipment, alongside an exhortation, "Go Trump." I was born of a Mexican mother and an American father, and grew up mostly in Mexico. I consider myself both Mexican and American. At home, I speak mainly Spanish, hoping it will encourage Mateo to embrace his Mexican side too. On the day after the election, we were riding the subway when he leaned into my ear and whispered, "Dad, perhaps we shouldn't speak Spanish in public anymore." One might read this moment in American history as an aberration brought about by a uniquely racist political entrepreneur, or explain it as a product of specific economic circumstances. You've heard the argument. Working-class voters, frustrated by decades of wage stagnation, lashed out at the cosmopolitan class that ignored their plight for so long. There is some truth to this. Many of Trump's voters are among the losers of America's economic transformations. He won white voters without a bachelor's degree by a 39 percentage point margin over Hillary Clinton. The 2,584 counties that Trump won in 2016 generated only 36% of the nation's GDP, according to research by Mark Murrow and Sufan Leo of the Brookings Institution's Metropolitan Policy Program. They include most of rural and small-town America, depopulated, aging, and seemingly terminal decline. The 472 counties that voted for Hillary Clinton, by contrast, accounted for 64% of America's economic output. This lopsided pattern can be made to fit the view that the us who were left behind by progress voted the smug beneficiaries of America's prosperity out of power. But that is hardly the whole story. It would be a historic mistake to gloss over the critical defining role of xenophobia in America's choice. It was not a freak event, not a bug in the system. The mix of contempt and resentment across frontiers of religion, race, ethnicity, and citizenship that anchored Trump's seduction of 63 million voters has distorted American politics since the birth of the nation. It defines who we are. You may call our condition racial hostility or simply racism. From America's slaveholder past through the Civil War and beyond, in the form of legal segregation across the Jim Crow South and de facto segregation across the urban North, the poll tax deployed to keep blacks from the polls and campaigns against imagined voter fraud to purge blacks from the rolls, ethnic divisions, to give them a tamer name, have conditioned every turn in the development of the American state. Standing in the way of social trust, blocking solidarity, they have made us decidedly poorer. Upon those injustices, we have built the most exceptional country, one in which the most extreme wealth coexists comfortably with deprivation that has no place in the industrialized world.